On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with noted Australian UFO researcher, Mary Rodwell.
The truth is that all we've ever got within ourselves is our own resonance to truth, our own BS meter, if you like. And ultimately, that is what we're being asked to trust because we've got nothing else. Out there, we're told huge amounts of information, some of it's disinformation, some of it's lies. What is it within us that resonates to truth? And my role is to facilitate a place where they can find their truth in their experience. And nobody has a right to tell them what to believe around that other than what they choose to believe.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, we're going to dive into a very controversial topic relating to the connection between extended human consciousness, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, spiritually transformative experiences that we talk so much about on this show, and those who report contact with alien intelligence, alien consciousness. Now, one of the things I find so fascinating after digging into this topic is the divide over the same issue that we keep pounding on, that is mind equal brain, i.e. extended human consciousness. Because what you're going to find in this show and the ones that follow is a major schism in the UFO community between those folks who are holding on to this biological robot notion. Now, they don't say it like that. They probably haven't even internalized it completely. But as soon as you start talking about spiritual experiences, they're out the door. So our guest today, Mary Rodwell, hypnotherapist, counselor, UFO and abductee researcher in Australia, is certainly controversial. If you have a hard time approaching this topic in the first place, you're going to have an extra hard time listening to what Mary Rodwell has discovered in her over 2,000 hypnotherapy sessions with folks who are dealing with the trauma of alien contact. This phenomena is challenging, but it cannot be overlooked if we're going to open ourselves up to all the possibilities and the mysteries of extended human consciousness. This is definitely one of the areas we need to look at. And I think Mary, despite the unconventional nature of her ideas, is someone I've found very intelligent, very believable, and very enjoyable to talk to. I think you're going to enjoy this interview. Before I get to the interview, though, let me make one more point about the Skeptico Forum, which I mentioned in the last episode. Well, since then, the new Skeptico Forum is up and hobbling, if you will. We're still making a number of changes based on your feedback and input. It's been very helpful. But one of the things I wanted to throw out there is an invitation to all of you who have visited the Skeptico Forum in the past, but maybe haven't been there in a while. These kind of dialogues between believers, an uncomfortable, inappropriate term, and skeptics, another uncomfortable and inappropriate term, are the kind of conversations that we want to have. They're not always easy. They lead to hard feelings sometimes, and they lead to people leaving the forum. If you're one of those people, we want to invite you back. We want to double our efforts to have that dialogue. Of course, we're going to do it in a respectful, intelligent way, but when you join the Skeptico Forum, you'll be part of that process. So I think you can have a voice in what that means to be respectful and intelligent while talking about those issues. But I do want to encourage you to pop over there and check it out and then help us grow that into the kind of experience that we all want to have when we engage in dialogue on these topics. It's real easy to join, and I think you'll like it. Give it a try, the Skeptico Forum. The links are all over the place on the website. But now, let's move on to this interview with UFO and alien contactee researcher Mary Rodwell. Today we welcome Mary Rodwell to Skeptico. Mary's a professional counselor and hypnotherapist, as well as being one of Australia's best known and most highly regarded UFO researchers. Mary is the founder of the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network, ACERN, where she helps those dealing with the aftermath of alien contact experience. Mary, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Alex.
Well, it's a big pleasure for me. As we were just chatting about a minute ago, I've seen many of your excellent interviews. You're really, one thing I have to commend you on, you're really a very open and generous with your time. You give many interviews to many people. I can see that you're very committed to spreading this information, and you do it in such a great way. I really want to commend you on that.
Thank you, Alex. I think that for me, it's about the fact that people are so discriminated in terms of their own personal experiences, to the point of almost anyone that's out of the box is considered abnormal in some way. And for me, it's this discrimination against personal experience, which I think is the hardest thing most of us have to deal with because of the judgment that goes with that.
I think that's a great way of saying it. You know, as we were just chatting about a minute ago on this show, we've looked at near-death experience quite a bit, and there is a similar kind of stigma there, although that's much relieved now with the media really kind of, the popular media catching on to that. The experience is no longer stigmatized in the same way. But certainly when you talk about people who had such an experience 20 or 30 years ago, they say, I told no one. I couldn't tell anyone. And that certainly is a situation that you're familiar with when we talk about close encounter, alien contact experiences. I'll tell you what, before I get too far along, for folks who are less familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started doing this work?
Absolutely. Well, my background is nursing midwifery. And for a number of years, obviously, I practiced my profession there. But I went into professional counseling about 25 to 30 years ago. And I've done the whole gamut from, you know, from relationship counseling to grief and bereavement to the whole range of what we call the more accepted normal human experiences. But it was about 17 or 18 years ago, I was in private practice, and a gentleman came to me and he said, I've heard you're open-minded. And he said, for this, there's no support groups. For this, people just think you're a loony. And he said, but he said, I'm having experiences. My family is, the children. He said, I feel like I'm being taken somewhere. I wake up with marks on my body, shaved areas. He said, the relatives won't even come to the house because they think it's demons. And he said, and my partner is freaked out. Can you help? And it was that scenario that brought me into this. And what was I was grateful for, as synchronicities would have it, I'm one of these people that has always read anything that's unusual. If it's weird and wonderful, I've read about it. I've got a book on it. If it's something weird, I've got a book on it, you know. And fortunately, because of that, I've always been more open to the mysteries, as I call them, in life. And one of these, fortunately, I'd read two books prior to this, only a few months prior. And one was Dr. John Mack, who is the former professor of psychiatry at Harvard University, who wrote Abductions, Human Encounters with Aliens, and also Communion, which Whitley Strieber's book, who again wrote about his own personal encounters. Fortunately, I had read those. And so when this gentleman came to me, I was intrigued. He was obviously very grounded. He was very articulate. It was, to me, there was no question that this was happening to him in the way that he described it. I was doing advanced counseling at the time at the Wosley Institute, and I actually took him as a case study, which I felt very brave to do because I thought they're going to think Mary's lost the plot, as they say in Australia. But what was interesting was there was a uniting minister, there was social workers and a whole range of professionals. And when I presented his case, I thought they were all going to say, well, Mary, he's obviously needs to see a psychiatrist or whatever. But what they did do was they started to tell me about their own unusual experiences. And it was fascinating. It was like I'd opened the door for people to say, well, actually, these kinds of things happen to me, or these, you know, I've had things I can't explain. So in a sense, it was a real clue to, so what else is out there? How many other people don't talk about certain experiences because they're not okay? But what it did do was say how limited psychology was in terms of understanding the greater reality, and how we've got to start seeing it as a dysfunction rather than the fact that we don't all fit into that box that says, unless you can touch, feel and see it, it's real. In fact, there's a whole non-physical world, and now we are actually experiencing it on many levels, and all of us have done this at some point or another.
You know, I think there's a couple of things you said there that are really interesting, and they're different, so I want to break them apart. One is you referenced John Mack, and that is someone who I often use as an entry point for people who are unfamiliar with this work. He is so credible, not only in his credentials, but in the way he comes across. And of course, he's no longer with us, died of an accident, unfortunately, a few years ago. But I don't know how anyone can encounter John Mack and his research and come away from this without being intrigued to look further. So I think that's a great starting point. The other thing that you mentioned, and I've picked this up from some of your presentations, that I think is really a profound point that you make, and that's that we have to start thinking about consciousness in a much broader sense. And it seems to me that a lot of this work that we're talking about and this other areas, like I mentioned, near-death experience, hallucinogenic experiences, remote viewing, out-of-body travel, all these things point to this larger consciousness that is available to us. But I really like the way you go out there and just nail it and say, look, we can't pretend like, gee, we've stumbled across near-death experience. Ah, that's one little piece. Oh, gee, we've stumbled across ghost phenomena. Oh, you know, that couldn't be related. And I think what I hear you saying is, come on, people, it's obvious by now, just follow the trails. We're talking about a much bigger kind of experience that we have to get our arms around. How do we begin to do that? What are the limits of that too? Because that's challenging. When the tent gets too broad, then we start getting in a lot of stuff that maybe starts making all of us a little uncomfortable, that we're not staying grounded in what we really do have the best data on. That was a long, long question, but maybe you get what I'm coming from on that.
I think everything you're saying, Alex, is absolutely right. What I've found as I've gone down, as I call it, the rabbit hole, the more you go down the rabbit hole, you realize how little we know about reality. And the truth is that all of us have experiences out of the box. The feeling like someone's going to ring, the knowing that it's not a good day to do a certain thing, and then you have that confirmed.
Don't get on that plane, and then the plane crashes, right?
That's right. Those feelings and knowings that we get that we can't quantify with our left brain, but 9 times out of 10 are accurate. Totally accurate. And we dismiss them because we can't quantify them through our left brain. But the truth is, that is another part of us, which I call our consciousness, that is way beyond our physical container, that gives us information if we listen to it. And that's what, you know, people who are psychic are doing, is they're honoring that other part of them that perceives things out of the box. I mean, I meet people all the time that say, Mary, I see energies around people. I see colors around people. You know, they may say, when somebody's sick, I know what it is. I can feel what's going on for them. Others, as we know, clairvoyants that see spirits, or those that see orbs flowing around, you know, that we get on cameras now and what have you. So, is this all an aberration of our reality, or is it in fact these people telling us more about what our multidimensional reality is? Because it isn't a third dimensional reality. We know now that a lot of these things can even be understood through quantum mechanics or quantum science, where, you know, we're being told the possibility of dimensions and parallel universes and the expanding universe. So all of this, in a way, is the new science, is actually qualifying how we work in this kind of a way where we can tap into consciousness itself and We're getting the clues from science itself. And this is what people don't get always, is that we're still, you know, those in the old paradigm that saying, unless you can touch and feel it, it's real. You know, my answer is, okay, so you know love is real. Tell me what form it takes. Tell me what color it is. You know, tell me how you know it's there. And they say, but I just know. Exactly. So, you know, and all these things really are saying the same thing.
Boy, I mean, that's a topic we've talked about a lot. I mean, there's actually another layer to materialistic science that insists that everything should be measured. And the other layer is really it's been falsified by the best science that we have, suggests that that's not really the way it is. And then I think that quickly gets into, well, why are things the way they are? Why do paradigms remain even after they've been falsified? And that's a whole other topic. So, Mary, a few months ago, we had an opportunity to talk with Dr. Janet Colley, and she's a clinical therapist. You might know her in the Seattle area of the U.S., and she's done a lot of work with people who claim an alien encounter that's caused trauma in their life. They come and see her as a therapist, and she's come to a lot of the same conclusions you have, in particular that essentially the core of these experiences, these alien contact experiences, we can only dance around that so much. At some point, we have to say, that's what we're talking about here, folks. And we are, as uncomfortable as that is for some people to really grasp, I think as anyone who's dug into this, and as we're alluding to, if you really dip into the research, there's a reality to it that is hard to look away from. The data is just so overwhelming that this is really happening. But I digress there for a minute. Dr. Colley comes to the conclusion, as you do, that these are essentially sacred encounters, spiritually transformative experiences. One of the things I was really hoping we could do, and I don't know if we can do it completely in this interview, but I almost want to set it up as something that if we find a way down the road to engage in this as a project, and that is to juxtapose the sacred alien encounter with the other major alien encounter paradigm that's out there, and that is from Bud Hopkins, deceased, and his research partner, who is very active, very much alive, and very highly respected, and that's Dr. David Jacobs, formerly of Temple University, historian, but someone who's done a lot of research in this area. I've corresponded with him. We're setting up an interview with him. And of course, his conclusion is very different. His conclusion is that these are not sacred encounters. And to the extent that we perceive them to be sacred encounters, we have to be very careful that we're not being deceived and that there is a much more malevolent agenda at foot with these encounters. So that's a huge area. Let's begin to kind of pull that apart. And as much as you're comfortable doing so, tell me your big level picture of what's the difference there and where you think the evidence stacks up.
That's a big one. And for me, the trouble is that it's so complex and so multi-layered. It really depends on what level that you're exploring this. If you go into, for example, hypnotherapy, where the person is just exploring the scenario, which for many of those coming in on this will only do that. They will actually see the person on the craft. They will see the person perhaps having procedures done. And that confirms the scenario that, yes, you've been taken, you've had a procedure done, you're not aware that this is something you've consented to. How terrible. And this is often the level that where it stops. And from that, it's understandable that you would interpret that and the person would interpret that as something that is negative and certainly unethical and all those kinds of things. But if you take it to another level, and there is another level that you can work on within hypnosis, and that is to find out why. Now, what the way that I have worked and those that work on deeper levels is that you're actually, what I call accessing another part of that person. It's not just the subconscious. I mean, for want of a better term, we'd call it the superconscious, or that part of you that knows. It's the part of you that knows when somebody comes to the front door that that person is someone you can let in or someone you want to keep the other side of the door. There's a knowing that that is a positive encounter or a not a positive one. What you can do in the process of hypnosis is to ask questions of that other part of them. And it can be done via communicating with the being that's in the room. And you can say, okay, so you're brought here. You're having a procedure. Ask them what they're doing. And so they may say, oh, they're taking genetic material, or they may be doing a healing that you didn't realize what they were doing. Or they're telling me information of why this needs to be done. And then I say to them, how does, you know, does that make sense to you? Does it resonate with you? Does that feel right? And they can say yes, or they can say no. But it usually is, yes, it makes sense, even though it's strange. One of the other things I do, because I work with people, you know, I do work with past lives. I do work with that, what I call the spiritual aspect of the person, which you can call the superconscious, the higher self, the part of you that knows. I usually ask this question: have you on any level consented to this experience? And what is initially was very confronting for me as well as my clients is they would perceive themselves as a ball of light before they came here. And they would say, I came here and I agreed for this because this is part of helping with consciousness. And there is a trade. And I will say to them, okay, how do you, you know, does that make sense to you? And 9 times out of 10, they'll say yes, even though it's difficult and it's been traumatic. I understand that. Now, this isn't me telling them what to say. This is them coming from that deep place, that inner knowing that is answering me. And I actually challenged Bud over lunch once because I said, okay, Bud, I understand your perspective and I know you feel we're being manipulated. And I'm not saying that some people are not, because I don't know. I'm only looking at what people tell me in that deep space of that inner knowing. And this is what they tell me. And I have to say, his response wasn't too positive. He decided it was time to leave the lunch. And I will leave it at that. Because I know that Bud has always felt that no matter how positive people will say their experience was, he would actually say they're being manipulated. And there's nothing you can do if a mindset is, I've decided that it's all negative, or I've decided it's all positive. For me, I don't know, other than my role as a therapist is to help people have an understanding of their experience, and how they choose to understand it is their choice. It's not for me to say, well, that's good or that's bad. It's for them to decide through the process of what we've done, whether or not for them this makes sense and whether or not this they feel has become a positive experience for them or not. There is no point of judgment from me, because then I'm not an objective researcher. But what I am seeing is that 9 times out of 10, this ultimately becomes transformative, and the patterns of that are happening over hundreds and hundreds of people. I work with over 2,000 people now. And with the ones that are the most traumatized, there's two reasons I've discovered. One is because they have had human interactions with military, which are very negative, which they are made to believe is actually ET when it's not. And that's the my lab side. And the other one is that they've not fully understood their experience. They've remembered the fear, but they haven't remembered the reason for that fear. It's often fear of the unknown, and not the experience, once they've been taken into the experience and they've understood why certain things have happened. It often changes their experience to 180 degrees. And they will say, now I understand. Now, anyone outside there can say, oh, well, they're wrong, they're being misled or whatever. The truth is that all we've ever got within ourselves is our own resonance to truth, our own BS meter, if you like. And ultimately, that is what we're being asked to trust, because we've got nothing else out there. In, you know, we're told huge amounts of information, some of it's disinformation, some of it's lies. What is it within us that resonates to truth? And ultimately, that's the only thing we've got, because actually, nobody has the full mandate on truth. We've all got bits of it, and we are fed all sorts of mixes of truth. So the only thing we've ever got in the end is ourselves as that instrument of choosing what is our truth. And everyone has the right to however they interpret that. And my role is to facilitate a place where they can find their truth in their experience. And nobody has a right to tell them what to believe around that other than what they choose to believe.
I really, really appreciate a lot of things you're saying there. I think it's fantastic. I wanted to pick up on a couple of them and get your thoughts. One is, you said that I think we cannot necessarily put too much emphasis on the trauma. And that may not sound right, but I guess I'd relate it to the shamanic experience that we know about through cultures. And it's often a very traumatic experience. And it's even understood to be a traumatic experience. You know, you don't choose to go through that, but you go through it and it's kind of for your own good. Now, there's some folks that would not be inclined to go there and think that that might be a little bit too generous in terms of ascribing those kind of motives to this contact experience. What do you think about that?
I think it depends on what level that you're looking at your life. Let's face it, there are lots of things that happen in our lives that seem unfair. And if you look at it from the standard viewpoint, is why, you know, they'll say to you, well, why does this always happen to me? Why did I have such a terrible childhood when other people have lovely childhoods? And, you know, we could look at how life is unfair for so many people, people that are starving in Africa and what have you. And it makes no sense. Why do some people have a beautiful life and others have a traumatic one? Well, it's the big question. And the only answers that I got by working with people on deeper levels and by working with people that were looking beyond the norm was that I've come to believe that we are on a soul journey, that we have chosen, if you like, certain experiences in our lives that enable us as a soul to grow. And for each one of them, it's different. For some of us, it will be perhaps experiencing limits, starving in Africa or whatever. For some of us, it may be learning about compassion or learning about non-judgment or whatever. And so we set up, I believe, as a soul, the life journey that we choose this time. And the reason that I feel that's correct is that I've worked with many people in what's known as in-between lives, where they leave one lifetime and they choose the next one. They choose their parents, their siblings, etc. And so you'd say, well, why would you choose such extraordinarily traumatic kinds of experiences? And some of them say, because that's the greatest growth. That's when we learn more about ourselves. And we also, through that experience, can help others through that experience. So where is they ask, and I've asked this, well, where's the free will then in that, other than our soul has chosen that? And the free will is in our attitude to it. Do we see our difficult experiences as victims, or do we say, through that experience, I gained so much insight into compassion or into empathy or into how I cannot judge anymore? So as a counselor and as a therapist, I'm always with someone offering them a chance for a different perspective on whatever's happened so that they can let it go and heal. And this is the same thing again, is that I do believe that not all people that have these experiences are traumatized. Only about 30% are traumatized, 70% are not. They're more traumatized by being on a planet that is barbaric, primitive. They say, I don't like it here. I know I've got something to do. My interaction with the beings is totally loving. They're my family, and I feel like I've been dumped on this very primitive planet. Now, that's about 60 to 70% of those that contact me, and the other 30% may be traumatized. And I believe that, like Janet does, that this is for some a modern-day shamanic experience where they are asked to transcend their fears and go to a new place of awareness and understanding, which the shaman has to do. He has to, or she has to, transcend their fears to go into and experience other realms. And if they haven't overcome their human fears, they can't operate in a multidimensional reality, which is where I feel we're going as a species.
Now, Mary, do you think that perhaps this is why Hopkins and Jacobs have gotten a different message? And that is that I think they're coming at this from a humanist, non-spiritual kind of academic, there's only this kind of existence perspective. Do you think that worldview is maybe shaping a little bit what they're getting?
I do feel that. I feel simply because if you don't take in the spiritual component, you're missing the most vital part of who we are. Most people acknowledge that we are not just a physical container, that we are spirit, and the spirit is our consciousness. And it's our consciousness that animates our physical body and drives the journey on this planet. But that isn't, as I said, all of who we are. We are here, spirit souls having a human journey, and we've chosen our container for that journey because we can't just be light here. We have to have some density. And until you go to that point, everything is about what's being done to you rather than actually taking part in the fact that you may actually be the pilot of your own journey, even if at the moment you don't always remember that particular fact. And that's part of the awakening, for us to realize that we are actually pilots in our own journey and that we are part of what we create as ways of the soul gaining information and experience. And that's how it makes sense to people.
Okay, but let's look at this through another lens, because I'm inclined to agree with you on Hopkins and Jacobs in that I think they've brought a lot of valuable insights to this. They've been pioneers. I really look forward to fully exploring Dr. Jacobs' perspective on this and giving him a fair shot at it, because I really do respect and admire his work. But let's say I'm with you on the fact that if you are predisposed to not look at or downplay the spiritual aspect of this, you might get a different look at it. But let's switch over for a minute. I want to talk about it from a transformative spiritual experience perspective, right? So I told you I've worked a lot with the NDE researchers and trying to understand what's going on there, the reality of the phenomena, I think, which at this point is just firmly established. Anyone who doesn't think that's a reality just doesn't know the data, hasn't done the research. But the second part of it, which is more challenging, and it's the kind of stuff we're talking about here, is what does this mean? What can we really understand from these accounts? And I don't want to go too far with that because I think that's dangerous. It is like the alien encounter accounts. They kind of quickly go in a million different directions, and it's hard to find some central themes. But if I was going to compare the central themes and ideas from the near-death experience to the alien abduction experience, there's some issues there, or some unresolvable for me issues. In the near-death experience, there isn't any trauma, really. There isn't the kind of trauma we're talking about here. There isn't the deception at all. And we have to acknowledge that there is a deception in the alien encounter. There's this mind control thing. There's this forgetting thing. And, you know, I don't remember any of it. And then 6 months later, I see something on TV and it triggers me and I'm in you know, falling apart because I saw it. Well, there's none of that. And there also isn't the technological component of it, which is so intriguing about the alien encounter. I mean, there's a lot of technology with that too. And again, the near-death experience totally transcends that. It says you are a part of this soul group. You are a part of this whole, part of this divine, people don't like the term God, but you know, all those things, and it comes through consistently. What do you make of the differences between some of these other spiritually transformative experiences, like near-death experience, and the differences between that and the alien encounter experience?
Again, I think it one of the things, Alex, that I needed to do was look at the patterns of the whole thing to do with contact, as I call it, from what appears to be the abductions to those that say, actually, no, I've never experienced that. I've only experienced loving encounters. So first of all, then why is that? Why do we have some that are traumatized and we have some that are not? Again, I go back to the soul journey. There is a purpose behind some experiencing the more traumatic one because it forces them to look at things in a new way. And there is a process. But what does happen with whether it's the traumatic or it's not non-traumatic is it's transformative. And when people say to me, well, you know, how do you know whether it's good or bad and what have you? I said, look, I can only go on what ultimately happens through this experience. Just like you say, you know, is an apple tree a good apple tree? Well, the apples are great apples to eat and whatever. And the apples in this ultimately seem to be transformative, that people have heightened awareness. They become more aware of a greater reality. Many of them turn away from materialistic values. They change their diet. Many of them become healers. They become more sensitive in terms of the world around them. They literally change in dramatic ways. Now, you could say, well, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, let's face it, you know, I so far from what I'm seeing is that they feel more connected to everything. They feel like many of them feel like they've got a mission to do good in the world. So if whatever this experience is actually altering people's mindset into a more holistic, caring individual that's far more sensitive, to me, that's the evidence of ultimately this experience. Now, it may be different to the near-death experience, and I think the soul chooses whatever wake-up call it wants. So for some, it will be a near-death experience. For some, it may be the alien abduction. For others, it may be feeling that you're a star person or whatever. Whatever it is, it may be a profound grief experience that changes your whole perspective, you know, losing someone close to you. We all choose our flag that says wake up. And so it's not really about comparing, you know, oranges and apples, other than the fact that all of it is transformative. And we all choose a different vehicle for that. For some, we need to be slapped across the chops a bit before we get it, you know, because that's the nature of the soul that's saying, I need a really rough one because the other ways I'm not going to take any notice or whatever. So again, I see it as you know, what's really interesting is those that believe something really negative has happened, for example, to them. When I've taken them into the experience, what they discovered was nothing like what they believed. They will say, you know, I felt I was being taken over. And when I've actually taken them to that point and saying, are you being taken over? And they'll say, well, no, actually, they're giving me information. So we come from fear. We think the worst. And we don't always know exactly what it is until we've gone into that. And this is what's blown me away, because I thought, as a, you know, I've worked with people with trauma. I thought, I'm dealing with people with trauma. They're having this terrible experience. Some of these beings are coming and doing all these awful things. But what I found was there are certainly some self-serving ones, I suspect. But on the whole, it seemed to be actually so much more than that. And that is what has, you know, I can only look at the patterns. I can only look at the data. That is my research. It's not me wanting one outcome or another. I can't do that because I don't know what I don't know. So all I can do is look at the patterns and see the outcome. And the outcome primarily appears to be a totally transformed individual, no matter what the journey was to that point.
Mary, you work with folks all over the world. Tell us a little bit about your organization, Australian Close Encounters Resource Network, and tell us how folks can and might get in touch with you if they're interested in exploring this with you personally.
Well, it is just the website as acern.com.au. But if they Google my name, it comes up anyway. It's very easy to find me. I'm having my website updated as we speak because it's got very archaic. And so it'll be even better for people and easier for people to access the information with links to interviews and everything else. But it's really, really easy. acern.com.au.
You've done some fabulous work on this. We've spent almost an hour here on this Skype call, so I want to wrap it up, but I definitely want to leave open the possibility that we can reconnect. In particular, I'd love to have you back on after I talk to Dr. Jacobs. And the real plan I have in the back of my mind is to see if there's some way we couldn't do some kind of collaborative effort between these two camps to try and move this forward, because I really feel that there are a lot of people out there that want to come along on this journey. They're open-minded enough not to dismiss it out of hand, but they're still skeptical. They don't directly have an experience with this, and they really want to see someone hash this stuff out in an intelligent way. So is that something you think you might be interested in joining me in?
I would love that, because there's one thing anyone with a different view can do is actually say, well, I don't want to hear any more, and decide to leave the lunch. So I'm perfectly happy to do that.
Awesome. Well, Mary, it's been great having you on. Thanks again so much for joining me.
It's an absolute pleasure, Alex.
Thanks again to Mary Rodwell for joining me today on Skeptico. I have a couple of questions to tee up as a result of this interview, but they're all pretty far down the rabbit hole. I'm really not that interested in the debunking-oriented questions on this one, mainly because what we're really trying to hone in on is this big divide in the UFO community between the David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins camp, if you will, and the John Mack, Mary Rodwell, Janet Colley, former guest on Skeptico camp. So we have one group of people saying that alien abduction is an abduction. It's a crime. It's a violation of human rights. And to the extent that we're led to believe it's anything else, that's part of a mind control aspect of the experience. And on the other hand, as you just heard, we have folks like Mary Rodwell saying, no, it's a transformative spiritual experience. It may be a hard one. It may be a rough shamanic initiation, but that's how we need to think of these experiences. So the question is, where do you come down on those two camps? Let me hear from you. The place, of course, to do it, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, is in the Skeptico Forum, which you can get to from the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. If you're not already a subscriber to the show, we have a subscribe link where you can get an email update when a new show is released. There's also, of course, an iTunes subscription button there on the website, and you can subscribe that way as well. Well, as I've been mentioning, I have several more interviews on this topic. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to piece them all together, but I do have an interview coming up with David Jacobs, a couple of David Jacobs detractors, and a follow-up interview with Mary Rodwell. So I probably have two or three episodes of material there, and I'll be working my way through it and bringing it to you just as soon as I can. Do stay with me for all of that. But for now, as always, take care and bye for now.